Welcome to In the Name of Game.
Welcome once again to In the Name of Game, a video game podcast. Today is Thursday, the 16th of February, 2012.
Welcome once again to In the Name of Game. We got three of the four people here today, but still a pretty good deal. I'm your host, AG.
I'm your co-host, David.
And I'm co-host, Colin.
And yes, so it is post-Valentine's Day, and
who cares? I'm sure you guys saw what I posted on Facebook.
Yeah, I saw
plenty of that. Yeah. Anyway, and, I guess that was pretty funny, because what I've been noticing a lot of people doing an increasing, like, oh, happy single awareness day, like, lately. And it's a little weird, like, it's some kind of passive-aggressive response to Valentine's Day. Honestly, Valentine's Day is clearly, you know, like, a Hallmark holiday. It's just for buying things. It's just for, you know, who can spend more money, who can do more lavish of dates or whatever. But I do find it funny that people are kind of being a little, you know, snappy back by saying, like, you know, Valentine's Day is bullshit. Just, you know, go to In-N-Out, have a burger. That should be enough.
Listen, I'm single now. But, I mean, even when I was with, you know, when I was with my ex-girlfriend, it's like we never celebrated this. And whenever people had, like, those stupid displays of affection, especially on Facebook, like, it's almost like they're trying to prove something, you know? Like they're trying to prove something by saying, I love my boyfriend so much. It's like, you don't love him the other 365 days a year, 364 days a year? I mean, I don't understand why people feel like they have to confine it to one day.
You know,
it's just frustrating to me.
It's funny that you mention that. In a way, it's almost like, I mean, this is off topic, but this is something I just noticed, that there's this great quote by Morgan Freeman about Black History Month. And it's the same thing that he's saying, basically. Like, right. Why... you know, like, the interviewer said, well, do you have a problem with Black History Month? He's like, yeah, we just shouldn't have it. And he's like, what? You don't believe that we shouldn't have a month about Black History? And he goes, yeah, you know, why are we confining it to one month?
Yeah,
when you exactly. When you get, like, white history, you know, every day of the year. And, like, where's the equality here? We should always be talking about, you know, different histories of our country.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't, you know. But the same thing, you're right, the same thing with Valentine's Day. Actually, same thing with, you know, Mother's Day, Father's Day, a lot of these days that, you know, they spend that one day where everyone's like, oh my God, I have to get flowers, I have to get this or that or whatever. And you realize, like, well, you should be treating that person well all the time, not just that one day.
Can I just put on record how shitty of a gift flowers are?
Yeah, well.
Yeah. I mean, well, let's see. Okay, number one. Okay, I'll give them that they smell good. Okay, I think a symbol of love that you want to give to somebody is not a dying plant that you cut off from its roots. You know, I don't think that's it's not really a good.
Well, symbol. If you gave somebody a plant that was, you know, potted,
it's still living. That's cool. It's still alive. It grows. Like, that's a good symbol. It's growing. You know, it has all that bullshit going along with it.
Like, but
I'm not
going
to cut off a rose. I'm not going to cut off a rose from its parent plant and say, "Here, have this dying, rotting, browning, nasty, withering plant." It doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's that whole thing, too, where it's like you're giving dying reproductive organs from a plant to somebody else. It's a little weird if you think.
It's waking up the feminist within me.
Yeah, well,
it's V-Day, too. It's what always used to happen. I always used to go see the vagina monologues when I was at college.
On Valentine's Day?
That's when, you know, it's V-Day. It's with the woman who wrote the vagina monologue. She has, like, a V-Day for awareness of, you know, sexual abuse and women being abused and stuff like that all over the world.
Wow.
So they always held, well, at least at, you know, my university, they used to hold it on or near Valentine's Day.
I didn't know. That's interesting.
Yep.
But yeah, for Valentine's Day, if you didn't buy into that sort of thing, of course, there was the Mass Effect 3 demo, which they released on the same day. And it actually, in an alternate version of that, Valve had a 24-hour maintenance on Dota 2. And they didn't say why, but a lot of people suspected, like, okay, this will force people to spend, you know, Valentine's Day with their loved one by taking away the temptation of playing Dota 2.
It's win-win, because then they all get to go home early.
That's true.
It was probably fake. Yeah.
So a bunch of Valentine's Day events that have nothing to do with Valentine's Day, which I thought was pretty funny. Speaking of the Mass Effect 3 demo, I had a chance to play it on PC, and it's kind of, I'm kind of curious, like usually, okay, there's definite distinctions between demos and betas. Whenever somebody gets invited to a beta, you need to keep in mind, like, okay, a lot of this is sort of in flux. Things can change. Graphics can be swapped. You know, sometimes you see a lot of placeholder things or stuff that's getting reworked. So I can forgive a lot of elements because that may not be the final version of whatever you're seeing. But this was marketed to us as a demo. So because it was a demo, which indicates that, you know, they're really trying to sell the game to us through this demo, I was a lot more critical of it. And I was not, I mean, there's some things I liked, like it felt like it was continuing the story, and there are other things that were just like, what is BioWare doing? They're like backpedaling, like they're, Dragon Age 2, whether you like the game or not, and we're not going to go into that part, had made some improvements, in my opinion, to their lip syncing and their overall facial animation. Maybe that was because, you know, you had a main character that actually spoke back for the first time in a Dragon Age game, that sort of thing, whatever. But it looked a lot better than the prior incarnation of the game. So when Mass Effect 3's demo came out, I was really expecting, like, look, I'm sure all of BioWare's games use FaceFX, which is a software that, like, basically, like, you set the phoneme, you know, the mouth poses for each phoneme. And it's, so basically that if you present a phrase or something, that it will draw upon those mouth shapes to make the animation, right? So the whatever they did for Mass Effect 3, bad lip syncing, weird mouth positions, just a general lack of emotional expression in their faces during the demo, which I thought was really bizarre, because this, you're supposed to wow people, right? Like, you have crazy Reapers doing all this, like, world-destroying shit around you. You have this really manipulative scene with a kid. Wait, Colin, did you play it? No, you didn't, right?
No, probably not. No, I didn't.
Are you going to play it?
I may. I don't know.
Well, it's a demo. You could, you know, it's a lot easier to try that. Yeah. So, basically, a lot of really good chances to wow us with some facial animation, considering that a lot of these shots are, you know, mid to close up shots where you're seeing, you know, from the shoulder up of that character. So really it should be, you know, very realistic animation, and it just wasn't, and it looked bad. It looked like really nicely rendered faces that moved very robotically, and it was just really disappointing to see. Not to mention, I didn't even notice the whole frame rate issue that other people were mentioning, that, like, some people, I guess, had Fraps or whatever frame rate software on. So they were saying they're getting like maybe 20 FPS for their run of the demo, and probably even worse on Xbox 360 and PS3. PS3 always gets shat on the most for these multi-platform titles, because, you know, they're a little complicated with their...
Because it has no games?
No, I did... that doesn't even make sense. That wouldn't come... It's hardware-based, damn it. Anyway... yeah,
the problem is they don't have any games. That's hardware.
See, you can't... What? Okay, anyway.
Just go on.
Ignoring that nonsense, it just was... There were a lot of flub-ups. No, not to mention, there's this really... If you play it, and I'm not sure if this happens with a male Commander Shepard, but if you play with a female Commander Shepard, look at that bizarre run cycle that they gave for her. She has her ass sticking out as far as she can while she's running. And then her arms are stretched out pretty much like in this huge wide stance, which I don't know if somebody would really do that, you know, when they're running. And then Anderson, who's running, the NPC running next to her, has this really crazy little flip, 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 you know, like he's kicking his feet up run. Not to mention he's running probably twice as fast as he really should be. So it makes the animation look even more awkward. It just made the whole thing look really poor. Not to mention the cinematic cutscenes that are supposed to be either pre-rendered or, you know, just ships and buildings and that sort of thing looked very pixelated. So some people picked out that. I didn't actually notice that until people mentioned it. So just another little notch on the list of problems. But, I mean, gameplay-wise, it wasn't bad. They are going for more of an action-based interface sort of more like Mass Effect 2, but maybe even a little bit further. And they, of course, add enough of the characters from the first two games, so you get your little, like, nerd boners. You're like, oh my god, there's Garrus, or oh my god, Rex is there, if he survived, I guess, because, you know, there's that whole thing in the first game. I'm a little conflicted. Like, realistically, I have so much invested in the series because of the first two games that, yeah, okay, I'm going to buy the third one. But I'm not really as crazy about it as I might have been. Like, I'm not pre-ordering it. I'm just going to probably get it right when it comes out. I'm not doing those crazy things where I'm like, oh, got to get the collector's edition. I got to get my place in line. You know, it's not thrilling me the way that maybe it could have been, I guess.
I'm not really thrilled with BioWare lately, to be honest. Especially after Dragon Age 2, that was the big one. But then, like, everything I've been hearing about Old Republic has just not been... It's been mediocre to bad, you know?
Like I said, I think from our last discussion, the biggest thing that they flubbed up with Old Republic is trying to cater to a lot of single-player mindsets, but with an MMO. Like... It is.
Well, that's what WoW been doing too. Like, they've been focusing a lot more. They really have. It's like when I played vanilla WoW way back 2005, you know, and they focused a lot more on groups. Like, if there was something that had to be taken down in a group, if it said it was a group quest, you actually had to work in a group. Nowadays, and I played Cataclysm for, I think I had a free month a little while ago, and it was like everything. I didn't play with anybody but one of my friends. You know, that's the only time I ever group with people.
I think some of that is not just the game, but it's sort of the shift of mentality of MMO players. Like, back in the day, hell, when I first started with Final Fantasy XI in 2003, I think?
Yeah.
2004, whatever. People were just resigned to the whole idea of, like, oh, I gotta get in a six-man party. I can't do a lot of this shit by myself past level, I don't know, 15 or something like that. So you just accepted that you'd have to do the level grind at some point and that you'd have to be with other people and that kind of thing. But nowadays, you know, gamers, it's kind of like a double-edged sword. Gamers are getting more sophisticated, but they're also getting more picky about things. Like, they're coming to expect, like, I want to have an amazing experience just with myself. Like, I want to be able to have that option so I don't have to interact with other people even though I'm
playing. So why even bother playing an MMO?
Well, that's actually the problem I had, because my feeling was I really loved the story, well, partial story in the case of KOTOR 2, but I loved the Knights of the Old Republic stories, and the thing I wanted was a conclusion to that, which should have been the third game as a single-player experience. But somebody felt like, oh, look at WoW, still going strong, God making a ton it. Of money.
And, well, and apparently WoW lost 100,000 people in the past 2 months.
But they're still making a ton of money.
Yeah, but they're starting to lose subscribers now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it had to, like, it's been how many years since it's been out? Like, I'm not surprised.
It'll be 8 years.
Like, that has to happen sometime. But yeah. A lot of people felt that, okay, look, Star Wars Galaxies we sort of fucked up on, honestly. And Star Wars itself is this franchise that just always seems to have a ton of fans. So what should we do about that? We need to benefit from that, because we have all these single-player games that, well, maybe you do 5 hours into it and then you're done and then you toss the game away. So it is kind of natural in a way to want to do a Star Wars MMO. I'm just pissed that they chose to do it with the Old Republic expanded universe instead of something else, or try to do Star Wars Galaxies again in a different form. Because there was all this story that I was hoping would finally get resolved that now will never be resolved in a satisfying way, because they've had to alter it to suit, like, several million people playing the game at the same time. It's very dissatisfying, especially with the whole Revan thing. You know, like, you are Revan for the first Knights of the Old Republic game, and it's so satisfying to craft that character the way that you want, make them give them the personality you want, the powers you want, that kind of thing. And then you go into Old Republic, and then people are talking about Revan, but what they're saying about Revan probably conflicts with how you created that character. And the stuff that'll happen later definitely conflicts with how you made that character. And so you feel kind of betrayed because you're like, wait, does that mean I have to have my own like headcanon of what the hell happened to Revan? Like, these guys are telling me, you know, some very specific things about what Revan was. And that's not what I did, you assholes. You know, it's very frustrating. So that's why, no, I agree with you. I think they should have just made it a single-player experience. Yeah. But they didn't. And so that's where they dropped the ball, because they still in some way wanted to cater to single-player people by saying, look, if you do one of these classes, you know, Dark Side or Imperial, Republic, whatever, any of the classes can technically be finished by yourself and your companion.
But I don't understand. See, I don't understand like the root of this mentality. It's like, okay, I started playing WoW because my friends were playing it, right? Mm-hmm. Most of these people, I think, would start playing WoW or KOTOR, or not KOTOR, just a Old Republic, you know, whatever MMO they end up playing because their friends are playing it. But then they expect to like solo the content by themselves. I don't understand that. It's like you join to play with your friends.
Well, you don't have
but
to.
Yeah, you do have to. It's like almost it's community enforced. Like people became so used to being able to solo all these quests in WoW nowadays that it's basically community enforced soloing from, you know, level 1 up to the level cap, up to level 85 or whatever it is now. And even then it's like you don't have a cohesive group, you don't have a cohesive guild that you hang out with most of the time. I mean, it just doesn't promote that anymore.
Oh, hardly.
But for any community, yeah. And I don't get it. It's like, you're playing an MMO. I'm not here to play by myself. I'm here to, like, fuck around with some people I meet in the game. And that's the way it used to be. Yeah. When I played Cataclysm, it wasn't like that at all anymore.
But that's what I mean. People's feelings about how they should be able to play an MMO have kind of shifted over the years. And now, for whatever reason, maybe because they came from a history of being forced to level grind as a group, people got frustrated with that and said, why can't I do some of these things myself? Why do I have to wait like 2 hours for a party, you know, to just kill waves of enemies over and over again? So 11 and WoW and whatever other MMOs tried to offer these avenues like, well, you can do some of this stuff solo. The thing Old Republic fucked up on was, like, there's a lot of stuff you could do solo. Like, really, unless you're doing PvP or the multiple man raids or some Flashpoint, you know, instances, you can really do too much of it by yourself. And they give you a companion that travels with you that really enables you to be able to do that. Because by yourself, it might be too difficult. But now that you have your little NPC follower, who I think almost every class has at least one that will heal you. Like, you just get one of those healers, and it's like, you're set.
It's so antithetical to the idea. I mean, that drives me up the wall just hearing. Like, I see people posting pictures of them playing Old Republic. It's like, this is your companion. It's like, why don't you just find a healing class and play around with them? It's better than sitting here and playing with a computer all day. Yeah. You know, it's better playing with a real flesh and blood human.
Well... For BioWare, the companion is sort of their way of mushing in the whole interacting with your crew thing, you know, like they do in Mass Effect and KOTOR and Dragon Age and stuff. Like, their games traditionally have had a crew of people with, you know, widely differing personas that, like, you need to raise affection with or sometimes have romances with and that sort of thing. And that's Old Republic's way of keeping that BioWare trait. Like, the companion not only acts as an NPC that can help fight with you, but, you know, you have the you can raise affection with them so that they'll talk to you about specific things to them, or in some cases you romance them, which, by the way, it is the cheesiest thing, seeing a companion propose to you in a Star Wars universe. There's something.
Can we switch subjects now?
It just seems really weird.
David's suffering over.
Okay.
His suffering.
I just think it's bizarre.
Palpable.
I think it's really bizarre.
I'm gonna go on record for saying that's the one thing that really annoys me about BioWare games is like that it's not forced, but it's like it's just like feels like it's lazy storytelling to me. It's like a lot of exposition goes on between the missions. It's like they just stand around in your ship just waiting for you to talk to them.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what happens in Old Republic.
Yeah.
You can give companions gifts, which you can either find or buy to raise their affection, as well as, you know, say the right things at the right time, which is the traditional way to do it. But if you spam those gifts, sometimes you'll raise their affection so quickly and so much at the same time that you'll finish one conversation with them on your ship, and then immediately after they still want to talk to you again. So like you could go through a bunch of their conversations way too fast. Like they didn't pace this out correctly. They didn't take into account people that like to grind companion affection levels the way that they grind levels.
It really is Valentine's Day, isn't it? Yeah. grinding affection levels.
This is the Valentine's Day episode.
I don't know about you guys, I'm getting a little turned on.
Oh, gross. Anyway, but yeah, so you dragged me into that, so I'm sorry. So they're actually, I think they're starting to lose, I don't know if they're losing subscribers technically, but I know a lot of people have just kind of put Old Republic on the back burner for a while, because I've noticed a lot less people on the servers. So maybe they already hit like level 50 and they don't really care about the PvP and stuff, and they're like, ugh, I paid for 3 months of this, so maybe I'll come back to it next month. I don't know. Yeah. So there's that. Speaking of last minute Mass Effect thing, because I have it on my tabs list here. So they made a very anime looking version of Liara from Mass Effect into a figurine that I can always say their name wrong. They're a figure maker in Japan.
Send it to me.
Kotobukiya. I think it's Kotobukiya. Whatever. So I don't
follow that model shit.
I have a Han Solo, actually, which is very non-anime looking, but it was awesomely made by them. So that's why I'm so surprised that they're doing this really annoying Bishoujo series of characters for Mass Effect where...
Are they for real?
Seriously. Here, I'll send you a link here while I'm talking about it. So they made a Bishoujo version of Liara, which means very anime-like with the big boobs and the eyes and a very unflattering, in my opinion, pose. And actually, she had really big boobs before, and there was a scandal about that, so they reduced the boob size. So that's the reduced boob size in the current incarnation of the...
Her forehead is about 4 miles wide.
Well, I mean, Asari have big foreheads, but that's not the issue. Like, the face looks nothing like Liara. Like, I don't really actually find... I don't find Liara that attractive, honestly. But, I mean, she doesn't look like that. So, not only are they making that figure, which is already annoying, but EA is doing this little deal where, and I didn't know about this till today, if you buy the figurine, they will also include an exclusive DLC for Mass Effect 3. So they're using DLC just like GameStop and these other stupid places to make you feel compelled to buy this. I believe it's like a $60 figure.
It's gonna be like a whole new fucking game.
I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's... I bet the DLC...
I know what it is? I bet the DLC is like some... It's like going to be a visual novel version of Mass Effect.
It might not even be that. It'll probably be like a fucking outfit. Like, this is a Liara figure. So maybe it's like a Liara outfit or something for
it's
her.
It's going to be like Shepherd-sama, Kawaii Ubu Desune. Like some stupid shit like that.
It's terrible. So that's just another reason to dislike EA. Oh, speaking of disliking EA, this is something that's related to Old Republic. I need to tell anybody that is using the security key app for like iPads or iPhones or whatever. The security key app, instead of using those little, you can buy either security key dongle from you know what they are, the little keychains from EA to make your account more secure for Old Republic, or you can download a free app. Now, of course, since the app is free, even though the keychain's only $4, a lot of people downloaded the app thinking like, hey, this is a free way for me to add a little security authentication code to make my account more secure. What EA did not tell people was that if you ever had to reinstall your iOS or for whatever reason, I don't know, you got a new phone or device and you thought, oh, what the fuck, I'll just reinstall the app. No, you can't. You will not be able to log into your account.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is a unique Security authenticator.
Yep, that's the way it is with the Blizzard authenticator that I have.
So you better hope that you never have to reinstall your operating system for your.
you just have to remember to get rid of that key and just, you know, like, add it to your new one.
Well, here's the shitty part, and they'll probably fix this, but right now it's an issue. You can't just, if you remove the authenticator from your account, it reverts back to your normal non-authenticator account. Like, you can't. I believe you can't just re-add a new one. It's like, hey, you're not using it anymore. Too bad. And people are like, what? So I can't have an authenticator anymore? What the fuck is this? So that is an issue that if you have that app, be aware of. Do not lose whatever device that app is on. Do not flash it with a new iOS or something because you will regret it. Or maybe you won't if you're getting tired of Old Republic. That might be the excuse to make you stop playing. I don't know. Anyway, so there's that. Let's see what else here. Oh, some good news, because I'm sadistic. Everyone's most hated company, Zynga, even more than EA or Activision or any other company, actually lost $400 million in 2011. Even though $58 million people played the games, even with that number of people, they still had that $400 million loss. So that's just a nice little indicator that things are slowly coming down for Zynga. I mean, I believe they still earn like $1 billion of revenue, which is annoying. But that means it's $400 million less than the previous year. So that's progress. Maybe people are wising up or finding better games or something.
Well, you did see that Zynga's suing a Brazilian developer for copying its games.
That's a first.
Huh. I know. Pot Meat Kettle.
What's the game?
I'm reading this on Slashdot, and what can only be described as a case of the pot calling the kettle black. Zynga has launched and settled a lawsuit against. Oh, they settled already. But launched and settled a lawsuit against Brazilian game developer Vostu after accusing Vostu of copying their games. Oh, man.
See, that's the thing. Right now, they have the money to just, you know, shove in somebody's face to make them go away. But someday they won't. And that will be the day that all the vultures and whatever descend upon Zynga and pick it clean, you know? That'll be it. Which will be a great day.
It'll be an excellent
day. An excellent day. But until then, just enjoy the fact that they lost that many $1 million last year. Yeah.
David's quiet. David, tell us about Sonic the Hedgehog 4 episode 2.
the screenshot that you showed me, you had to IM me during work and you're all excited. Describe.
Well, for anybody who's on XBLA.
I am.
So Colin. The whole deal that happened this past week is that for whatever bizarro reason, XBLA users got a sneak peek at what is the upcoming game this year, Sonic 4 Episode 2. And there's some pretty awesome stuff that was revealed. And it's, you know, I guess the whole deal with it is that, like, Sega was just considering it like a small update in terms of, like, news. But I guess even they don't realize how much they haven't said about episode 2. And so this small update is more like a big update for anybody who's sort of been waiting for any information about episode 2. So it just sort of confirms that what we were all suspecting about this upcoming episode, which is it's following along kind of the trend that they've set up in episode 1, which is sort of it's sort of got the game. It's got the gameplay mechanics and a lot of references to like Sonic 1, like the original Sonic 1, but with stage designs from Sonic 2, like how Episode 1 had like almost the verbatim copies of the special stage from Sonic 1 with the spinning world and gaining access to areas with like collecting rings and everything like that. But the stages sort of were a weird mixture of like Labyrinth Zone from Sonic 1, but like Casino Night Zone from like Sonic 2. And so following along that vein in the second game, of course, also, and we've talked before about how, you know, episode 1 is Sonic, 2 is Sonic and Tails, 3 is going to be Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles. Hmm. And so in 2, it's Sonic and Tails, and the stage designs are sort of like a, from what we can see, they released about 10 screenshots, and it looks like that it's sort of like a design mixture of some stages from Sonic 2, which unfortunately are escaping me right now, but there's definitely influence from Sonic 3 in there in terms
of
the...
Well, I'm looking at a picture now, it actually has the tornado, their plane, and it looks like something like Aquatic Ruin from Sonic 2.
Oh, yeah.
It looks just like Aquatic Ruin, actually.
Yeah, so there's references to Aquatic Ruin in there, and then from Sonic 3, there's episodes of the Carnival Zone from Sonic 3, and also the snowboarding zone.
Ice Cap Zone with the awesome music.
Ice Cap is amazing.
Yeah, so there's like definitely influence coming from that. That's great.
Is this oil field or oil ocean?
Oh yeah, there's.
Oh like, my God.
There's like an oil ocean-ish, stage in there.
And then the bonus. Wait, did you mention course, the? Yeah.
The special stage looks like. Oh man.
The special stage from Sonic 2, but revamped to look.
Yeah,
it actually looks
good.
Yeah.
So the half pipe from 2 is coming back, but it's going to be crazy because it's going to be really 3D. It's going to have like sweet draw distance, and so I'm sure it's going to be just phenomenal. And then another thing they revealed that nobody was expecting is that. It's actually going to have, people had sort of mixed experiences with this on Sonic 2 on the Genesis, where you could play as Sonic and Tails simultaneously.
Mixed? You mean awesome?
Well, no, like some people thought it was shit because, if you played Sonic and Tails at the same time, it was like a waste of time because, the player 2 wasn't really doing anything.
Oh.
And also, like, all it did was just hold you back, especially on the special stages. Like, unless both of you were awesome
unless you're both really good. Maybe. And, you know what? Actually, when I play Sonic 2 nowadays, I turn off Tails and just play Sonic by myself because Tails collects rings during the special stage, and then he stupidly runs into bombs.
Yeah, exactly.
Then, like, you're down a ring or two, and it's like, oh, fuck,
Yeah.
I really need that Chaos Emerald. Yeah.
See, when I played, my brother would always play Tails, and sometimes he would be a little bit of a troll. But for the special stages, he'd be very helpful, and the bosses would be very helpful, too. Because, there's that, if you ever have gone to dorkly.com, they have a funny video about, how Tails can't die, basically, and then they realize, oh my god, we could totally exploit this. Like, he starts beating all the bosses because he just, does the little fake death animation but comes right back on the screen again.
Yeah.
So, for those two things, if you had somebody that actually worked with you, it was pretty awesome, I thought.
I mean, that's why I mentioned it, because I know that you're one of the rare people that had a positive experience, but, to play on that, they are introducing in Sonic 4 that is now an online cooperative experience. So a friend of yours can play Tails over the network.
You're going to be playing Tails.
No, I'm not going to be playing this with anyone.
We should totally get it.
They're going to have a competitive mode like Sonic 2? That'd be awesome. I used to love the competitive
split screen mode. That would be kick ass. Yeah.
No, not just split screen, but just competitive where they play against each other.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
So who can get to the end of the stage first? Who collects more items? All that.
They have to include that TV that makes you switch places.
That was the best. So Sonic 4 episodes. Who's looking better? Of course, Sega keeps. Sega keeps saying, and I'm sure it's because they got tons of complaints on episode 1, they keep saying that they've completely revamped the physics engine for this game.
Thank you.
Mechanics, they say it every time they come up with a new release.
I wonder if they're going to just rip off the Sonic Generations one or something. Like, hey, just use whatever they used.
How about just add fucking momentum?
Yeah, just use any engine from any of the other Sonic games.
What did GLaDOS say in Portal? What, momentum is a function of mass and velocity. There you go. Mass and velocity? Yeah, M times V. There you go. That's it. That's momentum. Yeah.
So yeah, it promises to be even better than the first episode. I hope the music doesn't suck.
Oh, but, you said it wasn't so good in the first one, yeah?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, I guess I wasn't alone because on all the comments, people always talk about it. They're like, man, I hope the music is somewhat decent this time. It was almost unbearable in the first game. So, the game, one way, any way you slice it, it's going to be great. So yay for Sonic 4.
Speaking of sequels, I just want to mention really quick before we move on to the next bit that Assassin's Creed 3 has been announced as coming out this October 30th, which I'm a little surprised about because Revelations was just last year. And,
it's really soon.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about, actually. Because, you know, Assassin's Creed 3 is supposed to be, like, the big sequel. You know, like, okay, there's Brotherhood and Revelations, but those were kind of, like, half stories. You know, like, they're little mini steps instead of, like, a big step in terms of the whole overarching story. But Assassin's Creed 3 is on the way. They might have been doing what a lot of other companies that do, you know, these multiple numbered games in a series do, where maybe they had been working, I hope, maybe they've been working on Assassin's Creed 3 actually for a couple of years, you know, like after they finished 2, but they've been filling the gaps with Brotherhood and Revelations, you know?
Yeah, it's probably true. They probably split off into teams. They're like, all right, this team's going to work on 3, this one's going to work on this, and then...
Well, they did do that annoying thing where, like, if you looked at the opening cinematic to Assassin's Creed Revelations, like, they list 7 or 8 Ubisoft studios, which is like, really? Yeah. That many people for this game that was so short? Like, what were they doing? I don't know. Like, maybe it was, like, little sections of each studio or something. Yeah. But regardless...
I mean, that's probably how they got it out so quickly, so...
The
stopgap game, that's fine.
Right.
not big.
They did, I never know how to pronounce his name, but the company head, Yves Guillemot. Yves Guillemot, yes.
No, lights of all.
Well, he said that, he says basically they're investing more in AC3 than any past title in the franchise. Not only that, he's hoping that it's going to sell more than the 7 million units that Revelation sold. So it's they want the momentum to keep building for this. It's really going to depend, honestly, what the trailer shows. Like, if the trailer is showing something super sweet coming up for Assassin's Creed 3, then I'm sure they'll do just fine, because they kind of finished up the whole Ezio thing with Revelations. So now it feels like it's really all on the shoulders of Desmond, the present time, or like somewhat future time character, instead of all these past characters from, you know, Italy and such. So I don't know if they're going to introduce a new assassin from a different time period that he's going to be messing with the memories of, or if it's just purely Desmond. But I really hope they bring something new to the table, because there was a really good quality jump from Assassin's Creed 1 to 2. So if they can do the same thing with 3, I'll be very pleased. Because they learn...
Assassin's Creed 3, the opening.
The opening.
Get it. Opening night.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
You named it, not me.
Hoping.
Opening.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be good. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that, because I'm sure there's other Assassin's Creed fans listening. So despite Revelations, hopefully this will be a good one.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah, so there's that. That's all the news that's fit to podcast, right?
Oh, wait a second. You missed something.
What did I miss?
You missed Dota and Valve and Blizzard and...
Wait, what? You had to tell me about this.
You did?
Tell me about it.
Oh, I told you that the Blizzard was not suing, but filing a complaint about Valve using the Dota, quote, Dota trademark. Remember?
Oh, God. That's
before the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just can't help but think that this is a case of more sour grapes from Blizzard, considering that they've had, I don't know, what, almost 10 years now to copyright this Dota trademark if they really wanted it that bad?
They also are trying to make their own sequel to Dota at the same time, right? It just
I think it's just called Dota.
Yeah, but it hasn't been getting nearly the same reaction or exposure as the Valve version. So,
good.
No, but that's probably what this lawsuit is trying to do, trying to shut up Valve so that they can't steal away all those Dota players.
But the people who made Dota, did the one guy go to Valve? I forget his name. One guy started working on League of Legends, I think.
Yeah.
And the other guy went to Valve. Nobody went to Blizzard. So if anything, like, you know, Valve should be fucking around with who makes League of Legends? I can't remember the company right now. Riot Games, right. You know, I don't understand why Blizzard's just like, it's like we're hopping on the bandwagon too late, guys. We better use our political, you know, not our lawyer clout, because we got billions and billions of dollars. It's just like, come on, guys. You know, if you're really that interested in preserving your right with this trademark, Why didn't you trademark it when this game became really popular?
I'm curious what all the legal technicalities are with this, because Valve's not stupid. I'm assuming they must have gotten some kind of permission or licensing or something to be able to make a Dota game. I'm sure they just didn't say, whoop, let's make a Dota game, and not checked in with, you know, all the legalities of it. So I'm wondering if Blizzard's going to be trying to find some weird little mini loophole or some kind of little tiny legal tidbit that maybe Valve overlooked and said, oh, see, now you're infringing on us. You know, I'm not sure. I'm sure over the course of the next few weeks or months or something, they'll go into more detail about what exactly the lawsuit entails. But right now, it's just annoying that it's even there at all. Yeah, but Valve's smart.
Remember when Blizzard was a good company?
When was that?
back when that Warcraft 3 was good. I like Warcraft 3.
Well, I guess I shouldn't say anything, because I know my boyfriend's getting all excited about Diablo 3, so...
So sad. Jeez. It's so sad. It's just like, man, oh man. Oh, whatever. Let's go on.
Okay, so yeah, thanks for that.
What? I thought, oh, fuck you guys, seriously. I'm going to blow on a bottle. Just to piss you guys off.
Is that like, are you Lisa Simpson now? Is that yeah. What's happening?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so, David.
So, if anybody's still listening out there, we haven't done this in a while, but we have a non-news related topic for y'all today. And this will be our closer for the evening. And basically, it's something that we talked about a few months ago, but we wanted to kind of flesh it out now. And that is the ever popular topic of movies to games and back again. So basically, games that have been turned into movies that have been turned into games. Which ones are our favorites? Which ones are not favorites? And sort of what's in between, and the interesting sort of trends we've seen there. So we thought that we would start with the more popular one, which is the games made into movies. So
and the very low success rate for that.
Yes, this seems to be a extremely low success rate. I mean, we can name the usual suspects off the bat, which is
Mortal Kombat. You know,
Mortal Kombat. So Mortal Kombat, actually, I sort of put this one in the category of its own as well, because it's a polarizing movie where, you know, like Mortal Kombat, of course, we've mentioned before about how explosively huge that was. As you know, if you were a kid when this game came out, it was just like, oh my god, like this game is nuts. And like I was one of these kids that just got sucked way into the Mortal Kombat portal. And I was just like, I was in Outworld, yeah. and you know, like that movie came out when like Mortal Kombat 2 was already out, and like just it was just at its the height of its
and that theme madness. That actually was so catchy from the movie.
Yeah, I mean, what better marketing ploy can you get than like people screaming Mortal Kombat in the streets? You know, like which was the song and the commercial, and so. Yeah, that movie came out, which was like a whole mixture of weirdness. And like, it was also like, you know, I was just talking to somebody about this today, about like when, you know, there was this whole series of movies that came out in the 90s, and Mortal Kombat was definitely at the early end of this range of like CG effects in movies were like just starting to, they were just starting to get really popular.
Mm-hmm.
And, they, you know, like it was just starting to become this thing where it was like, oh my god, this is possible, like we can introduce weird CG effects. And so like it was, yeah, like Mortal Kombat was one of these movies that like had like a ridiculous amount of effects in it. And so it was sort of this weird movie that like the movie really itself sort of sucks, but you know, it's sort of weird. It sort of stands alone as almost like this incubator, like this test, you know. And then it opened the floodgates, I think, for even more of these. And then that's when we started going down the world of, like, you know, eventually Street Fighter the movie came out.
Oh God! And you know, okay, Street Fighter the movie. I want to mention just because it had this weird paradox where, okay, so it's a game, and then it's a movie. Right.
And then
it's the game of the movie.
It's the game, the movie.
Which I don't remember. It was on some weird system. Like, it was on, what was it, like the Saturn or something? Like, it was on a system I didn't have because it had kind of FMV. Like, it was digitized people as the fighters. So they were large characters. It wasn't, like, you know, drawn like the original. Like it wasn't 2D sprites. It was like,
yeah, it was like a Mortal Kombat version of Street Fighter, because it was like these, yeah, like photo sprites of the actors, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's very weird, and it.
Yeah, that one definitely is the ultimate example of there and back, and then there was of course the unfortunate House of the Dead movie, which was terrible.
I didn't even see that one. Did you?
Yeah, I didn't see it, but like the thing is that the trailer even was really disappointing, because I remember, like, I mean, I was never really huge into the House of the Dead movies or the games, but I remember being like somewhat into them, and I remember thinking when I heard first, like, oh, they're gonna make a House of the Dead movie, I was like, oh my God, that could be super awesome. It's like there's a lot of like interesting, you know, crap that goes down, even though it's just a just like a shoot 'em up game, but yeah, so that, you know, the trailer like had nothing to do with the actual plot of the game, you know, virtually. So that was a major missed opportunity. So and then of course more recently there's Doom. So
Doom was pretty unique in that they had that like 2 or 3 minute sequence near the end where it actually was in first person.
Yeah.
So that's that was amazing. Like the nerdy little tidbit, like, hey, that actually looks pretty accurate to what was it? They're trying to base it off of like Doom 3 at the time, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny. He was like, wow, you know, this movie would probably be a little less shitty if maybe the whole thing was just first person. I mean, it was already bad. It was already really bad, but like, might as well just make it first person.
Yeah.
If you're gonna do that nonsense, but
if the movie came out today, it would be in 3D, and it would probably be more successful in 3D, and you could just make half the movie in first person perspective.
Yeah,
just like it would be, you know, it would be far more sort of like surreal than what the actual movie ended up being. But anyway, yeah, that sequence is online on YouTube. You can look it up now. Somebody put it on there and whole first person, and it's great because they toss in like all these awesome references directly to the game in there. Like they have like straight up the bad guys from the game in that whole sequence, and the dude gets the chainsaw and it's like, yeah, all right, gone all the way now.
Yeah. So, I think it's also worth mentioning, not just movies, but there were a lot of, or there have been a lot of like sort of short film, mini series style adaptations as well. Like, Halo did a bunch of really successful short films directed by various people that used.
There's a lot of Japanese directors too.
Yeah, well, they did the anime. Little, what was that collection called?
It was Halo Legends.
They did Halo Legends, but I'm actually referring to those little short live action bits did.
Yeah.
That looked really good. I mean, they had the whole motion.
Was that the lead up to? Halo 3 or
I think
ODST?
It was Halo. No. I think it was
ODST. Reach, I don't think.
No. They started with Halo 3, I thought.
There was one I remember where it was like a guy who was on guard supposedly at some UNSC facility. Like like he had showed him in his training and stuff like that. I think that might have been for ODST.
Well, there was one for maybe 3 where it was the old man in the museum. And he was discussing.
I think that's
like,
the one I'm thinking.
But I don't think that was ODST because he kept mentioning Master Chief.
Well, Master Chief has something to do with ODST.
Well, yeah, but like it was really just focusing on like, oh, we wouldn't have survived if Master Chief hadn't been there. I don't know. But regardless, a lot of that was pretty successful, at least to me, because they managed to get a lot of decent special effects and the feel of the games in those short formats. Now, would it work as a movie? I don't know. Maybe, probably. But I don't know if they'd be able to hold your attention for that entire time. That might be a little trickier.
Yeah.
One that was not quite so successful was the more recent attempt by whoever made those Dragon Age miniseries with Felicia Day, where it's her character from Dragon Age 2, Talus the Elf or something. And I watched those on YouTube, and they're really bad. Very low production value, very bad acting, very bad story. But they want you to take it seriously because they're using a lot of terms from the games and a lot of, you know, places and locations and mythology and that kind of thing. So it feels like it's trying to be serious, but it just comes off as like something that's actually worse than, I don't know, something that some famous YouTube person might have already made. Like, Freddie Wong could have made much better special effects for that miniseries than the people that actually did the miniseries, which is pretty sad. Huh. So, yeah. But, yeah, I think it's a fine line between being too cheesy and being spot on for a lot of these stories, video game stories, because, like, some games, you know, maybe there's not that much story to them, or they're very visual and they don't have a lot of substance, you know, in terms of actual story. So when you have to make a movie, it's like, I don't know how you're going to hold somebody's attention for 2 hours. Like, you'll have great visuals, but if there's nothing to tie that shit together, then it's going to flop. Like, well, we were talking about this before the show, but the Tomb Raider series managed to be kind of successful. I mean, they had to do their own, was it the myth of the cradle of life in the second one? And then I forgot what the first movie's item was.
Yeah. That was really disappointing, too, because I've always been a fan of, like, the Tomb Raider games are really good. I think they catch a bad rap, at least the early ones do. The later ones suck, but, like, I think 1 and 2 are actually really good games, and I really wish they would have picked up some of the stories for those.
Right.
But, so they got Angelina Jolie randomly for the... I mean, I guess it kind of works. If it wasn't for her, maybe it would have been, like, a really bad series, but they got her for the movies. And what was interesting is you could almost sense whoever wrote the script was trying to figure, like, okay, how far into the video games can I go without it just losing a lot of the general public, you know? Like, they clearly made Indiana Jones-type artifacts or goals that were not in the games, but then had enough references from the games to try to keep, like, the gamers satisfied. Like, that stupid, like, running with two pistol thing that Lara Croft always does, and that really annoying, like, one piece of hair that's always in her face no matter what, and, you know, like, really tight clothes with, oh, there's boobs, and somehow she's running off of the wall. Okay, whatever. But it could have been a lot worse, and I guess they, you know, I'm not saying it was a fine art piece or something, but compared to, you know, the Mario Brothers movie, I think it was successful.
Before we get into that, let's also mention the Resident Evil series, which has seen even more success than the Tomb Raider series.
Yeah, but
that's still going on.
I hate that one, though. I honestly
regardless if you hate it,
I know
the entire universe loves it. Because
No, not the entire universe.
Yeah, but you can't argue with the money. It's making a ton of money. And so it's clearly successful.
What I hate, though, about that was that they took Mila Jovovich's character that never existed in the games, Alice, and they made her so goddamn prominent. Like, at a certain point, it's really just Alice versus the zombies for all of it. And, oh, here's a little cameo from Jill Valentine. And apparently Leon Kennedy's going to be in the upcoming one. But I'm sure they just pick somebody that just happens to look like him and has no real acting ability, because a lot of these side stars in these Resident Evil movies are, like, really shitty actors. But it's annoying to me that they didn't try harder to actually do, you know, there's enough plot. I mean, it's cheesy plot, but there's enough plot in the first, you know, 2-3 games to actually just make a movie based off of that. Like, they didn't have to devise this weird, like, unique story just for the movies that is kind of a leap in some ways. And then, oh, let's put in a licker from Resident Evil 2 because people clearly remember that. Or, like, the train from Resident Evil 2 because, oh, you gotta have trains in Resident Evil. Oh, you gotta have a mansion in Resident Evil. So you could feel like they, similar to Tomb Raider, they're kind of tossing gamers a bone a little bit just because it's like, you know, we know Resident Evil. Here's the zombies. There's a paper flying by that says Raccoon City on it. You know, we're gamers. We get it. Like, all right, whatever.
Right, exactly.
But a lot of people that watch, it's like, either they're not extreme Resident Evil fans. Like, they've just said, like, oh, I know what Resident Evil is. Or they like zombie movies, you know. And they the most recent one had 3D in it, right? So I'm sure that in itself was a draw to people because it's like, well, I've never seen a zombie movie with 3D before. So I'm sure, you know, gimmicks like that will always work to get people in. One example of how they almost got it perfect, but not quite, that I just thought of while thinking about Resident Evil was the Silent Hill movie.
Yeah,
because,
exactly.
It was at least decent.
They got so close. Like, why didn't... Like, they basically had the Harry Mason and the Harry Mason story, but not with Harry Mason. Like, I'm not sure why they had to have it be a girl and have a lot of the little mini details be so totally different. Like, they were so close. They got the look of it down perfectly. Like, it looked fantastic. Like, it looked exactly what I would imagine Silent Hill to actually look like. They got the fog and everything down. They even had fucking Pyramid Head for some reason in there, just because, oh, there's got to be Pyramid Head, even though this is mostly the story from the first game, not the second. And they had, what's her name? They changed her name a little bit. The girl, the little kid that Harry Mason was originally trying to find in the first Silent Hill, but now that woman is trying to find in the entire movie. Like, they have a lot of that intact. And it just killed me, because it's like, if they just tried a little bit more, they could have essentially just redone the first game perfectly as a movie. And it was so close. But, yeah. I think visually, though, they really hit the nail on the head. Like, it was creepy. The sound. Like, I swear to God, I think they actually got the guy, what's his name, Yamaoka Akira? I can't remember what his name is. The composer for the Silent Hill series, I do believe... Either he was the composer for the movie or he did a lot of the tracks. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
But good on them for trying pretty damn hard. I can't remember. Yeah. There was a period of time where they said they were going to try to make a sequel that was basically, you know, Silent Hill 2. That got me a little excited, but then I haven't seen anything since then. So that's what I wish the Resident Evil series would have been. Because there's a lot of really awesome games, you know, before Resident Evil 5, that have, you know, stories that I want to see in live action. But now I won't, because they've done this fucking Alice and the Resident Evil zombies thing that now you can't undo, because they have, like, five of these movies.
Yeah. They're too far down the hole now.
Yeah, they can't go back.
It's too late for them now. Do you think it would take a true fan of a game to, like, direct a movie and actually make it good? You think that's what it's going
to
take?
No. I don't think so. Because I'm trying to remember. The guy, for example, the Silent Hill example. Let me look up what the name of the... It's not Gus Van Sant, was it? That did...
It's the first Silent Hill?
Oh, Christoph Gans.
It was Christoph Gans.
Yeah. Like, he... You know, in the interviews, he sounds like one of the typical guys, like, oh, I thought the game was very interesting. Like, clearly, realistically, I don't think he'd played it before. Or if he had, it wasn't, you know, he wasn't a super insane fan of it or whatever. I'm sure somebody showed it and said, hey, look at how interesting the style is, and I'm sure he agreed. But I think if somebody can understand the feel of the game, they don't necessarily have to be a fan, but they just need to respect the game. I think that's the important thing, respect. When you think, like in Resident Evil, that you can just snag a couple things and then, you know, splash a bit of, like, movie paint on it and say, like, oh, there's your title, there's your game, gamers, you know, that's not going to work for me. Like, I want something that clearly shows that somebody went through the effort of making this work as a film rather than just, you know, Frankensteining it up and taking little pieces here and there of what they want. And, making a fucking monster out of it. Like the Mario movie.
Now, the Mario movie, is, we had talked about this briefly before the show, and I can completely understand, because I mean, even my childlike version of myself when I saw the movie felt this way. It's pretty much a disaster, top to bottom. But I do sort of have a special appreciation for it, just because, like, I was saying to our crew here that, you know, when I saw it as a kid, and I heard that a Mario movie was coming out, and it came out after Super Mario World had been released, and it was just, you know, everybody had Mario fever, basically. It was like, oh my God, Mario movie, and, like, you know, I just wanted it to be the game, the movie, you know? Like, mm-hmm. let's do it. And this movie came out, and for anybody who's seen this movie, the best way I can describe it is, like, it's as if somebody told somebody to, like, we want you to make an interesting interpretive art piece, and your prompt is this video game. And, like, that's, like, what it is. It's like, barely... It's barely the game. It barely is like a shadow of anything that remotely resembles the game. It's just sort of this thing that's, like, born out of this, like, you know, this seed of an idea. Like, man, you watch it, and it's but that's part of the thing that I actually find so interesting about it, is that it's not just like a straight up failure of an attempt to make the game into a movie. It's more of this, like, well, here's, like, sort of things that inspired us to make this super weird acid trip of a movie.
And I think it's a pretty, like, cool movie, actually.
Yeah, it's really, I think, strange. It's a really cool, like,
movie. Yeah. I mean, it's not good, but it's cool.
Right.
Well, yeah, no, like, but are you saying that now, as an older person looking back and analyzing it, or was that what you actually thought when you saw it when you were younger?
I didn't see it when I was younger, actually.
Oh, really?
Oh,
I never.
Because I saw it in a fucking theater when I was a kid. Yeah. So I remember thinking,
91,
massively
early 90s, maybe.
Yeah, it was the early 90s.
I might have been too young.
No, but I just remember thinking, like, what the hell is this movie? Like, I guess there's Mario and Luigi.
I think I was in sixth grade when it came out, and, like, I remember going in. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think, like, if you're a kid and you see this movie and you're at the height of your Mario excitement, it's the biggest letdown in the world, because you are so badly like, I remember as a kid being in the theater and just thinking to myself the whole time, like, oh man, when is this going to turn into a Mario Brothers movie? Like, what the hell is going on here? Like, who are these people? Why is Dennis Hopper in this movie? Like, who are these? What are these giants, like, 7 foot tall things with tiny heads walking around? You know?
Would you rather have a TV show? Like, swim your arms from side to
well,
side.
Well, at least, like, I don't know.
I don't want those guys playing the movie, but, like, I wanted the cartoon, the movie. You know? Like, I wanted, like, actual adventures in the Mushroom Kingdom happening, the movie, you know, and stuff like that. Like, I was like, dude, when is he gonna jump down a damn pipe? You know, like, what is going on here? I think it needed a lot less.
The tiny ba-bomb that they had it at one point. Look out! It's a ba-bomb, and it's a fucking wind-up toy. And I remember even thinking as a kid, like, what is this?
That was the most exciting part for me as a kid, because I was like, awesome, there's a thing that looks just like the game, like, maybe it's going to turn into the movie, to the game now, and then, like, nope, now it's over.
Well,
like,
for me,
I guess he has...
for me, the part that almost was exciting, and then it really wasn't, was when they got those power shoes on, because I was like, hey, that almost looks like the Kuribo shoe, you know, from Mario 3, but, like, oh, wait, it has a fucking rocket on the bottom. Never mind.
Like, one millionth as exciting.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, that's, you know, Super Mario Bros. Will have a special place in our hearts as... for all time. It's definitely one of the weirdest things.
Far away place.
No.
Oh, hey, I just looked at this. I was thinking about that Silent Hill sequel. I didn't really realize they actually went ahead with it. So it's going to be called Silent Hill Revelation 3D. And actually, it's supposed to come out this year. It's written and directed by a guy that I'm not familiar with. His name is Michael J. Bassett. And let's see, it's based on the horror survival game Silent Hill 3. So they're picking a good Silent Hill, actually. And let's see. It actually looks like they really are trying to do the plot of the game itself. So the plot follows teenager Heather Mason, who was the character in the game, who discovers on the eve of her 18th birthday that her presumed identity is false, and as a result is drawn into an alternate dimension existing in the fictional American town of Silent Hill. So that actually sounds pretty damn close. Ironically, it looks like her father is also Sean Bean, which... if anyone watched the first Silent Hill, he was the dad. So I'm not sure if they're actually trying to make a connection because, you know, that character in the first game was, or first movie was like a reference to Heather's younger self in the first, like she was also the girl character in the first Silent Hill game as well. Like she became the protagonist in the third one. So that's kind of a nerdy, cool little tidbit.
Nice.
Yeah, so maybe there's a bit more hope for this one. They seem like they're actually trying to follow it closely. Just watch it be directed really badly. That's the thing that'll kill me. Like, yeah, finally, so. They'll try to get it accurate, but then the director will be, like, fucking it up. So, I don't know.
Well, if they can... you know what question we have to ask, though?
What
video game do you want to see made into a movie?
Do I want to see?
Both of you guys.
You know...
Let's go around the table.
Well, let's start with David first, huh?
Okay.
When I was little, and I'll never forget, like, when I was little in the Super Mario movie, it hadn't come out yet, but just the idea of the Mario movie coming out, and it was like, we're going to make a Super Mario Brothers movie, and I was like, holy crap, that's awesome, and immediately, the first thing that my mind went to was, holy crap, I hope they make a Metroid movie, and like, ooh, I really
that
wanted
been
to
cool.
see
them make a
Metroid. That would have been cool.
Exactly. And I think... and now more than ever, it would be awesome because like it's the universe has been expanded since then, and it's really great. And I think even you know it would still be a good idea to make it into a movie.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, like it could be for all those fans that also like you know aliens or whatever. Like you'd have some maybe really well designed Metroids, and then you'd have to do something with a suit that made it feel like it was like a real design of a suit, but still had a reference to. You know, the original design.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I like that idea very much.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That would be super awesome. So that's
a good
my
reaction image there, Colin.
Isn't it? Yeah.
He has, Colin has posted a picture of Dave Chappelle eagerly freaking out and humping a bed as a response to that idea for the Metroid movie. I think that is very appropriate.
Yep.
When I was little, just like immediately my mind went to these images. I'm just like, well, at the time there was just like Metroid on NES when I had this idea. So in my mind, I was just like, dude, I can't wait till they get to fucking Ridley's area. That's going to be so cool looking. And just like me, of course, this is before the Mario Brothers movie came out. So in my mind, I was like, of course the movie is going to be just like the game. And then once I saw the once I saw the Mario movie, I'm like, woo, maybe they shouldn't make that Metroid movie.
Well, that's why, you know, despite a lot of people always trying to make fan versions of it and hoping that there'll be a real version of it, I don't ever want to see a Legend of Zelda movie. Because
yes,
I know
exactly.
It's going to mess it up. I don't think there's any way... like, you can't make it, like, Lord of the Rings style because that just doesn't fit Legend of Zelda. But you also can't make it, like, literally like how the games are because then it'll look cheesy as hell. Like, there's no winning for that.
Lest we forget the super awesome fan trailer that, or not fan trailer, but like that fake trailer that IGN made. Remember that?
Yeah, visually it was cool, but like they of course didn't have any dialogue or any story, so that could get really dumb really fast when you actually have to have content in there. But the visuals, like the visuals, could be fine. I don't know if I really like that Link so much that they picked, but it's like Link. No, but I mean like it's always been very difficult because Link's such an effeminate looking guy. Like to get somebody, a real person that has those qualities, but still has to be like a badass. Like it's almost like a character that can't exist. You know, like a lot of anime characters, like when you try to make a real version, like, you know, that Phoenix Wright movie that they're making right now. This is actually good that we're mentioning this because the Phoenix Wright movie, which I think is already out in Japan, has a very weird looking Phoenix Wright because they basically tried to take, you know, that hairstyle and somehow make it work in the real world, which it really doesn't. But that's
that
another
looks really stupid.
It looks really stupid, but ironically, the movie itself is supposed to be pretty damn entertaining. So I guess people have looked past that. But him, like Link and some other characters, you're just always going to kind of lose when somebody has to make a real life version of that. Like, it'll never really look exactly like, you know, with the exception of maybe some cosplayers, but then those cosplayers can't act, you know. What are you going to do, overdub the lines or something? Yeah. Like, what's going to happen? It's not going
to
work.
So what's your wish list movie to, or a game to be made into a movie?
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
Well, for the longest time, and I always thought this was possible because there's a lot of talented people that love Star Wars. No. Just hear me out. Really thought, you know, because after being so disappointed with Lucas's, like, rapings of his own source material. By the way, he claims now that Han never shot first, which is ultimate bullshit. Like, that's just taking a crap on every fan out there. Like, he's trying to say that people miss
it. Let's not get into shooting. No. And by the way, I think we might have to preemptively disqualify this because Star Wars was a movie first.
No. Okay. So. But I'm talking about a game specifically. You know, since they've been claiming that they're going to make a live-action TV show and all this stuff, which they still haven't done. When I played the first Knights of the Old Republic, I always wished that somehow they could have made that, like, a movie. Like, it would have worked so well as a movie. You know, obviously cut for time, because there's a lot of shit that happens in the game. But it had a very compelling story. You got the plot twists. You got the compelling characters. And in my case, since I played a female Revan, you have a very interesting love... a love interest that, like, you got to work for it. Like, he doesn't really like you at first. You earn his trust, all that kind of cool stuff. And you have an awesome starship and a lot of really awesome battles. Like, you'd have action. You'd have really good content. I always felt like it would have made a really cool movie. Like, that would have been very much in line with the previous Star Wars movies. But obviously that will never happen. But I always wish that it would, because it would have been so amazing. But that is the inherent problem with those BioWare games. Because your character is so customizable, what you consider that main character will never really be exactly what anyone else considers. So that's another reason why it can't exist. Because they could make that main character male or female with a totally different personality or whatever. And then when that movie comes out, you'd be like, what the fuck is this character? This isn't the one I had.
What about a game that was, like, exclusively only a game ever into a movie? Like, do you have one of those?
Well, until they actually did it, and it wasn't what I wanted, I kind of wanted Final Fantasy VII to be, like, a movie.
Well, yeah, but then they did.
Are you talking about Advent Children? Because Advent Children was amazing.
No, but I mean, like, I wanted something that was that story. But, you know, because back in the day, they're little block characters. A lot of stuff is, you know, just flat backgrounds, that sort of thing. But if they could have made a convincing, like, using today's special effects, at least.
Yeah.
If they had made an adaptation of that today and not done the stupid Resident Evil thing where they just kind of do whatever the fuck they want. But if they really stuck to the story, I think that'd be a pretty awesome movie. It'd be a fantasy movie, obviously. But
right. Is Advent Children, like, not enough?
Well, Advent Children was weird to me because the story, for one, didn't make a lot of sense. Because there's a lot of things where, like, where did these guys come from?
Dude,
what are they doing?
Dude, it's a Japanese game.
No, I know, but, like, it felt kind of like weird fan service, but just kind of there to be like, hey, we're throwing you a bone, you Final Fantasy VII fans. There's a bunch of really pretty CG people. Like, what I've always disliked about how a lot of Square cinematics work is that they're kind of for flash first and content second. So a lot of the stuff that happened in the movie didn't make a ton of sense, but it looked great. So I was conflicted thinking, like, wow, Cloud and everybody look really awesome. Sid looks fucking great, but...
Yeah.
What is going on? Like, Bahamut randomly running around. They're doing that crazy fucking thing where they kill Bahamut with, like, one sword strike. It's like, what is that? But, yeah.
Super cool, though.
It was cool, but it wasn't, like, I wanted the game as an adaptation. Like,
right.
If you could make a compacted version of that, all the best moments put in a coherent, like, movie, if that's even possible, That's what I would have wanted. Or like a mini series, maybe. Maybe a movie is asking a bit much because it's like a 60-something hour game. Like, I don't know how you would do that. Yeah, if they would have made a really good, like an amazing quality, like live action miniseries with a good production budget, because I know how that can go. You make a miniseries and there's like no budget for special effects, and then the special effects look really shitty. Like Heroes ended up being.
That's what shall not be named.
Yeah, that show. I think that would have been awesome. Nice. I mean, obviously Final Fantasy VI was amazing, but I played on, let's be honest, I played the 7th one first. My bad, guys. So of course that's the one I'll consider first. And no 8, please. 8 would honestly be probably easier to make into a movie, but I just don't want to see it.
It's too melodramatic.
And that's what I'm saying.
Nobody's going to argue with you on that one.
They would get What's-Her-Face from Twilight to be Renoa.
All right. All right, let's move on now. That's enough.
Colin, you said, you had one that you wanted.
Yeah, Itchy's going to get mad at me, or at least frustrated.
What? Is it a Blizzard title or something?
What?
Is it some Blizzard game or something?
No, it's not a Blizzard game at all.
Okay, what is it?
It's Yume Nikki.
As a movie?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, at least hear me out. Okay, David, I'm sure, you know, it's not exactly, I'm turning on my hipster a little bit here. It's not the most popular game, but I mean, you know, at first I thought that, you know, this game is based, you know, it's about this girl. It's made an RPG maker, so it's got kind of that 16-bit look to it, you know, and it focuses on this girl's dreams, and it's implied that this girl went through, they don't really say explicitly, which I think is kind of the power of this, the game itself is like, it doesn't really give a concrete story. So you kind of leave it open to interpretation, you know, a lot of psychoanalytic stuff. And, you know, I think that it, given to the right person and executed the right way, it'd be a really cool movie. You know, like the way I think about it, like I've thought about this a lot, because this is like, it's a really simple game. Like I said, there's no story. There's not really any cohesive plot or anything like that. But it's like, you know, the power you give to it, if you gave it to the right person to direct it, I think it'd be really cool. It's just a matter of pulling it off right. Like, you know, myself, I would say, like, you know, when she's awake, like during her waking life, it'd be live action. But with every dream, it'd be like a different animator. Like a different person would direct the animation for each separate dream, you know.
I could see how that could be cool.
Yeah. It'd be, I think it'd be really cool. And it's like, I've thought about this a lot in my head. It's not just like, oh, I thought this would be cool. I mean, I thought a lot about this, you know. And I don't know. It just seems like it'd be more out there than most. I mean, this game is more out there than most video games are anyway, but it'd be a lot farther out there than a lot of video game movies would be.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Cool. It's hard to talk about if you don't know it as it's hard to talk about if you don't know it as well.
Right.
I think, you know, No, go ahead. What were you gonna ask?
Oh, I was just saying like you'd end up with like a rad like sort of live action interstitial version of the Animatrix where you have like all these sort of mega trippy animations that are strung together in one continuous story.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Maybe you'd have to have like when she's awake actually be live action just so it's clear like there's a distinction.
What I mean. Like that's what I said when she was in her waking life. Like basically this girl like cloisters herself in her room and she never leaves her house. And it's basically just her like writing her diary about the dream she's having. So it's like, you know, at first it'd be kind of, you know, clean animation, but as it goes on and on and on, it's like gets more bizarre and more, you know, dirtier. And like at one point in the game, like she dreams she's in like an old school 8-bit RPG, like an Earthbound sort of game. I think it's modeled after Earthbound actually. And it's like at one point, like the game, you know, in her head, the game actually bugs out and it forces her to wake up, you know, something like that, where the animation become extremely fucked up. Like, you know, one of your old games is messing up, something like that.
Yeah.
Not that bad. Would be cool. All right.
Yeah. See, it wasn't that bad. Itchy didn't like the game, and I know that this. No, let me finish this. I know this game isn't for everybody. It's not everybody's cup of tea, and you didn't like it. And
the idea sounds cool. I don't particularly care for the game itself, but presented as a movie, maybe it would be interesting.
You know, this game isn't for everybody, but I think I think it's one of those that might actually work a little bit better as a movie. You know, I don't know. That's just me.
Hmm.
That's just me. It's, you know, all the ideas I have for it are way, way, way too ambitious.
That's good. Guillermo del Toro on the phone.
Well, actually, no, there's a flying sequence in it, and I was like, holy shit, it'd be really cool if Miyazaki would do this.
I mean, yeah, that might be a bit of a stretch.
I know it is. It's totally a stretch. He'd never do it. Just, I mean, I've read a lot about the guy, and he'd never do it, but it's like, you know, I mean, the girl dresses up as a witch flying on a broom, so it'd make perfect sense for Miyazaki to, like, come, you know, like, harken back to Kiki or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it.
That's it. There ain't no more.
Well, there's a lot more, but I could go on for hours. But it seems like we're out of time anyway.
Yeah, that's about. That's
a good place to stop. Well, we should end with a not so bad idea from Colin.
Yeah,
thanks,
see?
Colin.
See, I'm not all stupid all the time.
Yeah, not all the time. Anyway. That's our show for this week. If you have any input about what you think the best movie game would be, why don't you email us at nameofgamepodcast@gmail.com, and we'll talk about it on the air and discuss it. Or you can tweet us at In the Name of Game. We have a Facebook group. You could leave a message there, In the Name of Game. We also have a website where you could leave a comment there, too, at inthenameofgame.com. So many ways to reach us and tell us about what you think should be a video game movie.
Call me on my cell phone. It's
not that. Probably not that far, but there's still a lot of other ways to reach us, so just as good. Right? Okay.
Indeed.
Have I still not gotten any death threats?
No.
Just one.
Just the one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yep.
So
you're having a relatively safe week this week.
Yeah.
Excellent.
You're fine.
Nice.
So until next week, this is all of us telling all of you, have fun with games. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Don't get mad at them, though. Don't get mad.
Okay. Don't get mad at them video games.
Stop getting mad at video games.
Yes. That's good. Bye.
Bye later.
Bye.